It is under the Aegean Sea, between Greece and Turkey, but nowadays no longer has a direct link with the surface. We call it a library, although it doesn't contain many books. We have historical stories related dramatically. It's like theater, but more so. There is much more in Portologos which we will show you, in part at least. Within Agartha, no passports or papers are needed. We have airports inside the earth, which lead to openings, concealed from your eyes, at the north and south poles. We travel in an environmentally friendly way, using existing highways, and the universal laws of energy. Our technology is so much in advance of yours that we can't get lost or have an accident. You may have invented the wheel, but you haven't gotten much further. All our energy is free. You could use this same energy, and we are planning to teach you how it works. You have abused technology, using it to build weapons. These are destructive, not only for the intended target, but also for the animal kingdom and elementals. Emily put up her hand and called out, "Cicilla, please tell us more about living here. We need to know, now that we've come to live in Thalos." Cicilla continued, "First and foremost, we don't like destroying the ground which you surface dwellers walk on. We want grass and flowers to grow without being trampled on. That's why we have learned to hover, which you will also learn if you stay here. Hovercrafts do it, and we do too. This lawn is made especially for heavy surface dwellers like you, but there aren't many places like this. We are taller than you in comparison, but lighter, because of the food we eat." Emily wanted to know about our home life. "Of course we have one. We build the round, roofless houses you've already seen. A round room never gets dusty, as there are no corners. Energy moves freely in a circular room. When a speck of dust flies into a room, it is removed on a wave of energy. It has the same effect as a vacuum cleaner, without the bag. This is practical, to say the least. We are incredibly rich, because we have precious stones and metals in abundance. Our homes are luminous. Externally, there is privacy. Inside, we have a 360-degree view. On the surface, you are locked in dark rooms, while we can see not only outside our homes, but right up to the stars. Our field of vision is unimpeded. Apart from our houses, there are no shopping centers, no blocks of flats, no motorways. What do you do about food?" Someone called. "Are you all vegetarians?" Cicilla grinned. "You bet," she replied. "No animals are killed here for food. We eat fruit, vegetables, seeds, and grains. There is no life force in what we call dead food, by which we mean meat, fowl, and fish. There are distribution centers where we can obtain food for each day. Some of us get food from the universal source, which only requires concentration. A working day lasts 4 hours, which gives us time to spare and time to take our health and diet into consideration. We live harmoniously, without hurry or stress. Nothing is wasted. We have advanced methods of recycling. We eat only locally produced food, and don't add chemicals to it. A vegetarian diet has slowed and finally stopped the aging process, and we have achieved what you call immortality. We have full control of our aging and can lengthen our lives as we wish." "What a lovely life," sighed Grandmother, and many burst out laughing. They probably couldn't believe it, and would be unable to follow this regime. "What about clothes?" called a very elegant lady. Cicilla laughed and spread out the skirt of her long dress, which was fastened with a sparkling belt. "How about this?" she asked. "Our fashion may be considered uncomfortable and boring by Earthlings. Of course, we have a choice of materials and tailors, but not in the same way as you. The latest Paris fashion doesn't enter into it. We like soft, wearable clothes in beautiful colors. We use capes outdoors if necessary. We know you wear jeans, shirts, and jumpers, but we only wear those if we are visiting the surface. I think we are clothes conscious and wear imaginative clothing, but maybe you don't agree?" The elegant lady giggled, but didn't reply. She looked horrified when Cicillo added, "My dear, we produce things by thought in this part of the world. We create by thinking." She was quiet, and shut her eyes a moment. With a wave of her hand, she produced a wonderful bouquet of flowers. Everyone screamed and probably thought it was sorcery. I didn't like the atmosphere at this juncture. I went and put my arm around my wife's shoulder. Then I looked at the elegant lady, who seemed to have turned to stone, an ugly look on her face. "Ladies and gentlemen," I announced, "you are here to learn about this part of the planet. My wife has told you a great deal. She is no enchantress. Anyone can learn direct creation by the power of thought, but you need quiet and patience. It doesn't involve magic, sorcery, or witchcraft. It involves knowledge. Knowledge on the surface hasn't developed to the extent which we Agarthans take for granted. Here everyone is a magician, to use layman's terms. I suggest that those who can't accept our culture leave our inner earth and return to the rat race on the surface. You ought not enter Portologos, because it presents even greater challenges." I took the bouquet which Cicillo was still holding, and threw it out into the audience. There was a moment of silence, and then applause. But the elegant lady stood up without glancing in our direction, and vanished into a waiting hovercraft. Most of the rest of us entered the amazing, shimmering library known as Portologos. A few of the visitors remained outside, discussing what they had just heard. They simply didn't dare enter. No one on the surface would ever believe the stories they could tell, so maybe they should just return and keep quiet about the mysterious land they had visited. We wandered around the lovely, immense building, watching holographic images of the past and future. It is difficult to describe Portologos. It really has to be experienced firsthand. It's a weird mixture of the physical, the psychic, facts, and entertainment. For people on the surface, the past is available in fairly reliable books, but the future is yet unwritten. Here, the past and the future are accessible to everyone. You can play with time as you choose, or go beyond time. In this context, things may seem scary and unfathomable, but when you are here, it becomes completely natural. We were resting, catching our breath in one of the common rooms. Edmund, sitting beside me and my wife, asked, "There's something we've avoided talking about, and that's illness. Is there a hospital here, and doctors? How does the health system work? Do you not get ill?"
"Oh yes, there is illness," replied Cicilla, "but not much. We break arms and legs, and have problems with internal organs. We're just human, you know, but we have healers to help with illness and accidents. If you lose a limb, you can get a new one. We exchange worn-out body organs for new ones. There are as many skillful healers as there are problems. You can't lose or maim a limb in your etheric blueprint, so from this eternal blueprint, we can restore any lost or maimed physical body parts. What about mental health if you're in need of a shrink?" asked a young man with fine, dark hair, which he shook continuously. I laughed. "We're all shrinks," I pointed out. "We have many wise men and women who help when necessary. They have endless patience, and the ability to guide us through problems." I remembered how dreadful I had felt after the shipwreck, and what a short time it took to get back to normal. I mostly had my friend Manal to thank for that. "There aren't any televisions, telephones, or radios," a very young man called out. "How do you communicate with each other?" Cicilla's laugh rang out. "We use our brains and thoughts," she answered. "We accomplish all we need with the power of thought. You haven't really figured out how it works up there on the surface, Valencio, my dear." The young man looked harassed. "How do you know my name?" he snapped. "In Italy, where I come from, we Catholics don't allow any mumbo jumbo. The Pope, my father, wants us to keep to the Holy Scripture." "The Pope is your father?" I asked, flummoxed. "Do you mention that in Italy? You must have been a sin of his youth, surely?"
"I don't think so," Valencio replied calmly. "That's why I'm traveling.
I found out about Agatha from one of the high priests, Cardinal Riemfort. He's French, and has always been kind to me. I know what goes on behind the scenes at the Vatican. That's why they're looking for me now. I'm a wanted man. I've always longed to be anywhere apart from where I grew up. I think I'd like to stay here. What religion do you believe in? You do have a religion. Tourists are allowed to stay for 2 days, I commented. I relented when I saw the look of disappointment on the boy's face. I can ask, if you really want to stay longer. You'll have to ask my wife about religion. Cecilia gestured to the boy to sit, and he sat down at her feet. I was brought up in a monastery, he said. We were treated cruelly and beaten with a stick. When I finished school, I was forced to live at the Vatican as a kind of novice. My relationship to the Pope was completely hushed up. My father pretended not to recognize me, even though sometimes I had to serve him. He never looked me in the eye. The only friend I had was Cardinal Riemfort, and he taught me much more than Greek and Latin. Otherwise I was regarded as a thug, although I tried to be as observant as possible. My attentiveness meant that I noticed much that was taboo. I can tell you more of this later. Riemfort told me the earth was hollow and that you could get here by sea, or via Mount Shasta. I ran away. I stole some money that was lying around and took a plane to South America. It was easy. Now I'm wanted for stealing, although I consider the money mine by right, as I was never given a penny, while the old men in the Vatican drank and ate well and were sensuous in the bargain. He paused for breath, and I interrupted. Valencio, I said. Thank you for being so honest. You should really be locked up, but we don't do that here. I'll speak to the powers that be and see what they say. Until then, you can live with Edmund, who has 2 scamps you can help look after. Edmund had listened to this confession in its entirety and couldn't help laughing. The Vatican, oh my goodness, the Vatican. He chuckled, slapping his thighs. He can certainly live with us, there's plenty of room. He can't steal money here, but maybe he should send some precious stones to His Holiness the Pope when he has earned some, with a politely respectful, affectionate letter. Valencio looked confused, but then giggled too. I tried to look strict, but it's not one of my strong points. How old are you? I asked the boy. 19, soon 20, was the reply. Please don't return me to the surface. The Vatican has spies everywhere, and I'll be taken into custody at Mount Shasta. Cardinal Riemfort will guess where I am, although he won't tell. He's the only one of them who has a decent heart. Politics and religion, exclaimed my new grandfather Lex. My dear Cecilia, what are your views on these important subjects? My wife's smile froze on her face. It was obvious that these subjects were not dear to her heart. Actually, Lex, my dear, we don't really get involved, she replied. Throughout Agatha, we have only one religion, our belief in the eternal source, the dwelling place of love. There aren't any dissenters or free thinkers. We are all one in this love. We call our belief the faith of light. Everything is one in love. Yes, but who is in control here? Somebody or some group must govern the country. It was Edmund's turn to ask, and Valencio's face reflected wonder and anxiety. Of course, I replied. We are governed by a council of 12 masters. 12 is the magic number for endings. That's why Mayan culture has predicted changes to the earth in 2012. I know, but you aren't allowed to mention that in the Vatican, retorted Valencio. I have my own religion in my mind. My father is in heaven, as he doesn't acknowledge my existence on earth, Pope that he is. I realized the sense of bitterness this young man felt towards his father and his tough upbringing. Is your mother alive? I asked. No, Valencio replied, and I could see he was fighting back tears. A man isn't allowed to cry was still part of his worldview, formed by rigid monks in secret, where a strict god judged the human heart. My mother died a few months after my birth, the dark-haired boy continued. I don't think she died of natural causes. They said she died of complications after giving birth, in an effort to blame me. Cardinal Riemfort helped relieve my conscience. My mother was the daughter of a rich, respected nobleman who owned large estates in southeast Italy, near the Pope's childhood home. She was disowned and cast out by her parents, who looked upon me as a bastard with no right to live. I probably would have been killed if Cardinal Riemfort hadn't argued my case, and I was taken in by thick-skinned monks instead. That's my life history. I would like to stay here. The monks taught me well: astronomy, geology, advanced mathematics, French, English, and Latin, of course. Might I be of some use? We'll see what we can do, answered Sicilia gently, giving the boy a lovely smile. Any more questions before we split up? Are the taxes here, or don't you use money at all? How do you pay for things when you buy food, clothes, or houses? Or are you just allocated these things? Doesn't anybody earn a wage? My inquisitive grandmother was on the case again. Not in the same way as on the surface, grandmother, I replied. We exchange goods, and there are centers for goods everywhere. We take only what we need, and return things when we have finished using them. We swap with each other. We make things ourselves. The four-hour working day is very intense, and if we can't organize something, there is always someone else to help with planning or whatever. We don't buy, we share. What about law and order, then? Are the police, lawyers, and judiciary? These questions came from Alex. We have laws, yes, I answered. The legal system is ancient. There has been democracy here since the beginning of time. Agatha's network is responsible for our safety underground. Cases that arise and need solutions are considered individually and judged in God's light and the holy code of justice. Our long lives provide experience and wisdom. There aren't many difficult cases here. Many of the ancients here lived on the surface originally, and know how to differentiate between good and bad. I think we should sleep on this until a new day brings us new energy. Edmund called out, with two slumbering children at his side. Titch gave a short bark and raised his enormous weight, looking inquiringly at me and Sicilia. Valencio went with Edmund and the children. A small fleet of hovercraft waited patiently in the rose-colored light which came at the end of the bright golden day, bringing promise of the heavenly cradle of sleep. Next headline. 20. The purpose of pets. We were awakened by Titch's indiscreet scratching and panting. It was time for the next stage in discovering the culture of this remarkable land. I suddenly thought of something at breakfast, and I was devastated. Sicilia. What about your parents? I asked suddenly, seizing her hands, which had been busy crumbling her bread. What about them? She asked, putting some bread into her mouth. I've always presumed they were dead, I said. You've never talked about them. We should have invited them to our love union if they're alive. Do you have any siblings? We've actually forgotten to talk about these things, replied my wife. My parents live in the fifth dimension, a long way away. They know of our union and gave their approval. So far, you can only see three dimensions, so you wouldn't have noticed if they had come. I have a sister and a brother. They are also five-dimensional. But you can meet them all when you're ready. I crossed the boundary when I lived in Telos for a while. It's not the first time I've been three-dimensional, as I love earthlings and want to help educate them. Now I'm married to one, although you will also become five-dimensional. Now I really don't understand, I sighed. If you were five-dimensional, I wouldn't be able to see you. I know there are both kinds in Telos. And you know that five-dimensional beings have the capacity to transform themselves when they want, interrupted my wife. But if we have children, I stammered. What would happen to them? Would they be a mixture? Sicilia's peal of laughter removed my anxiety. You've got a lot to learn, she hooted. The things you don't understand yet. She got up from the table and danced into the garden with me following. Manuel was there. I was just about to visit you, turtle doves, he said, smiling. Arniel wants to see you, remember, Tim? I was a bit embarrassed that I'd forgotten. Manal apologized to Sisila for leaving her alone on this beautiful morning, and then I was off in his hovercraft, wondering if I would learn anything exciting, like how to become five-dimensional. Not yet, Manal said, obviously reading my thoughts. It's not far off, but you have some work to put in first. That stuff about dimensions, I started to say, is very complicated. My friend finished the sentence. Here we are. I jumped down. Titch had volunteered to stay with Sisila. He loved her and the garden, and she liked playing with him. Like many other buildings, the one before us now was inlaid with jewels. The interior glittered with gold and other precious metals in ingenious patterns. Anil was sitting in a comfortable armchair, gesturing for us to sit down. Now you're a serious member of Agarthan society, Tim. He smiled. You have married the daughter of original inhabitants. This makes us happy, and we offer our congratulations. But there is a genetic disparity, in that Sisila has more genes than you. Now you're married to a native, we'll have to transfer some more to you. At the same time, we want you as our special envoy to interact with the surface. It's possible to do both. We need people like you on the surface. Things may be different now you have a family, which may well grow. You need to learn more telepathy and many other magic tricks, as you like to call them. We have put this off until you were really one of us. Manal will come for you every day, and lessons will take place in a variety of locations, starting tomorrow. That is my message. I was pleased with this, and so was Sisila. It was a four-way celebration, as Grandmother and Lex threw an Earth-style party for us. Even my little Titch was invited. He always knew something special was going on when he wore his wide red collar with gold studs and a rosette. So far, we hadn't met any pet dogs. I wondered why, and decided to find out more about pets in this world. There's no real difference between morning and evening in Agartha. The sun always shines. We decide ourselves how we want to divide up the day, and we sleep when we need to. Many people keep regular hours, just as on Earth. As we trotted over to Grandmother and Lex's, we decided it was evening. Actually, we hovered across, our feet carefully above the ground. We'd learned how to do this, and it's not as weird as it sounds. In this way, we didn't destroy any plants. My grandmother had set out a Swedish smorgasbord, as far as possible. Swedes love their smorgasbord and like to indulge, even abroad. Grandmother still had some treats she had brought with her, like crisp bread, ginger thins, and dried meat. All we needed was schnapps and beer, but instead we had wine from Tullow's. Manal was invited too, and seemed somewhat confused to see the groaning table. He kept to the vegetables from Tullow's. Titch was given a meaty bone and danced around in delight. I'm going to take this opportunity to ask a question, I said, as we were sitting outside among trailing flowers and leaves. Grapes grew like a roof over us, and the scents from the warm ground were almost overwhelming. Do people keep dogs here, or are they considered unclean, like in Oriental countries on the surface? Don't worry. Manal smiled. There are all kinds of pets here, but we don't walk them like you do. We always have a purpose if we're walking, and it may be difficult to take a pet along. We use cats and dogs therapeutically when necessary. Don't you up there? He lifted his hand to point at the roof of grapes. Realize the healing properties of cats, dogs, and horses? There aren't any healers here who don't use them in their treatment. It's important to keep the animals clean and cultivate their intelligence properly. They're not allowed to run around willy-nilly. Does that answer your question? I stroked Titch as he sniffed my arm, which obviously smelled interesting. What a shame he hasn't learned that, I commented. Manal's smile widened. Titch is going to learn all about it. He's coming on our field trip tomorrow. He'll be learning at the same time as you. That sounded great, if mysterious. I was being educated with my dog. That was a slightly mad thought. Next headline. 21. Lessons begin. So what happened to Valencio?
He came to grandmother's party. We had quite a good chat about his escape, his misgivings, hopes, and great sadness that his father didn't care for him. He regarded himself as an orphan and wanted to stay with us. Manel promised to ask the Galactic Council if they could give him a home in Agartha, or another planet. In the meantime, he lived with Edmund and the children, where he was very popular. It seemed that Sicily knew more about the lessons Manel would provide than I had supposed. When I expressed concern at leaving her so soon after our love union, she consoled me that it wouldn't be for long. Many lessons could take place at home, and she would be the two. Apart from that, she had her own daily chores and I had to remember that no one worked longer than 4 hours each day in Agartha. After that, your time was your own. It was strange how all tasks seemed to fit into the allotted time. This could be achieved on Earth, too, if people were more disciplined. Manel arrived punctually the next morning. I had come to rely upon this tall, slim man with his long, blonde hair and friendly demeanor. I felt totally secure with him. Titch did too, and showed his enthusiasm as we got into the hovercraft. He wagged his tail constantly and tried to push between Manel and me, not easy in such a small space. The hovercraft stopped in the countryside outside Toulouse. As I stepped out, I could see a farmer working in a wheat field. We walked over to him. He was carrying a seed bin on his shoulders and sowing the seed by hand. I was surprised, as I knew how easy this would be with a tractor, on the surface. Suddenly, a host of nature spirits appeared, elementals as tall as humans, yet so fragile they were hardly visible at first. "We work with nature spirits here," remarked the farmer, shaking my hand firmly. "They check that the seeds are in the right position to maintain vitality. That's the secret of all the seed here. Its vitality remains in all you eat." Devas yearned to return to the surface to help. "Close your eyes, Tim," Manel ordered. I closed them. When I was allowed to open them again, we were in the middle of a field of golden wheat, glowing with ripeness. The farmer at our side laughed and called, "This is what you get if you don't spray it with rubbish, but allow the crop to grow as it will." I could see it was excellent grain, even if there was an occasional cornflower, poppy, or daisy adding an undeniable charm to the mass of gold. "You have to remember," Manel observed, as we walked with the farmer, "that on the surface you ship food from all over. Food imported from other lands cannot increase your vitality, as it doesn't receive the right local encouragements. It introduces something alien into your body, which often strikes a discordant note with your inherited frequency. In fact, you could say that you are consuming the thoughts and feelings of unfamiliar people, and these are then transferred to you. This affects your internal organs, unbeknownst to you. Ingesting thoughts from other countries may increase fears and phobias previously dormant. You're left wondering where those thoughts and ideas came from. Is that true?" I yelled in horror, feeling like a cannibal. "I just want to be myself." "You are yourself, don't panic," Manel laughed, thumping me on the back. "But surface dwellers will have to return to nature. Things aren't looking good for them." While we were talking, Titch had been sniffing around and cocking his leg here and there. When he sat down to do his business, I tried to stop him, but the farmer restrained me. "The best manure we have comes from animals," he said. "We bring manure from towns and houses to use on arable land. Human excrement is pulverized in situ, and mixed with dung to a sandy, non-smelly powder. The best growth is the result of natural manure, not artificial like they use up there." He pointed skywards. It was strange to think of artificially fertilized fields hanging just over our heads. Of course, it was a good way off. We were in the hovercraft again. "That was a great lesson," I beamed. "I'm glad there are farmers here, and that they reap a good harvest without too much effort." "It's not a matter of effort," Manel answered. "We are willing, and we work hard. It owes a lot to the goodwill of Mother Earth, as we don't add artificial fertilizer. Now we are going to have a lesson on beliefs." Next headline. 22. the temple of belief and a meeting with Melchizedek. We talked about religion yesterday when your grandmother mentioned it, Manal remarked, as the hovercraft stopped in a circular garden with a small building in the center.